Welcome back to the Purple Menace Podcast. Billy Wessels, Clint Foster here again. Talk some sports news. It'd be nice to hear some sports news this week. It's been a rough week for a lot of people.
Yes, let's welcome to the sheltered harbor of our TCU Athletics ramblings, where you can escape from any and everything else going on old mixed up world of ours, yeah. And just settle into a little horn frog conversation.
Yeah, so we're all purple here, so yeah. We all agree on that.
Yes.
So
we all bleed purple or bleed out.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so you had a crazy week. You were all over the place, huh?
Well, I was all over one place. I was in Iowa, which I flew into Des Moines. I was working out in Conesville, Iowa.
Okay.
If you've heard of Conesville.
Big city.
Oh, yeah, very big. Very bad. I'm talking one gas station mini mart that kind of monopolizes the entire zero stoplight town. And so
it's good business model.
We ate gas station pizza for lunch every single day while we worked that whole week because it was the only thing in town.
Yeah.
But we stayed actually in Iowa City. Well, we stayed in Muscatine the first couple days, which was a cool little town on the banks of the Mississippi. Then we stayed in Iowa City, which is where the University of Iowa is. And that was a good time, you know. Met a couple of kids who had just graduated from Iowa despite not going to any classes and had some of the local fare. And I walked over one night to the stadium to see where it's situated next to the new children's hospital everything. So that was kind of cool to see that. Shout out to Kristen Barnes, who's from the area and who gave me some advice on like things to check out and places to eat and stuff.
There you go.
But it was a long week. It was a tough week. We were doing a lot of manual labor this week. We were the work crew this week. So that was, it was fairly intense, but I'm home now and I'm a little sore and ready to talk some frogs.
There we go. Well, cool. Let's talk about today. We're going to get into a little bit of recruiting off the bat. A couple new offers sent out this week. TCU lost a player from its 2020 class. Not a total shocker. Based on how things are going, a little bit of baseball news, nothing too crazy there. We get into the best numbers in the 70s for this week, and then answer some Twitter questions. Pretty much going to be it today.
Yeah,
so let's hit it off with recruiting. Actually, let's start with the news about Dominic Richardson.
Yeah.
Not going to be coming back. So
yeah, what's the deal with that, Billy?
Well,
tell us about it.
Well, what do you want to know? It's not like it's he would be fourth among freshman running backs in the depth chart.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, he'd be fourth among freshmen, probably fifth overall, because Amari DeMercado I think he'll be the starter in name.
Yeah.
And then Zach Evans will probably be the co-starter. And then, of course, you got Darwin Barlow and DeMarque Foster sitting there, too. So you're looking at best fifth on the depth chart. So I wish him the best.
Absolutely. Cannot begrudge that decision bit.
none whatsoever. So you got a guy like Zach Evans sitting there, you had to take him.
So how's that work for him? Is he having to forego his scholarship? Is he asking him to walk on in the next place, or he's released from
He's released, so it's sort of like with Evans at Georgia, because Evans signed with Georgia, and then they released him. So he's free to sign wherever he wants to now, if they have a scholarship spot open. Now, that's what sucks.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
The timing is pretty terrible.
It's arguably the worst, because now, with everything else going on in the world, and then suddenly it's tomorrow's June 1st, or we're about in June, and you don't have a school that you're going to yet. So it's unfortunate for him right now, but he'll land on his feet somewhere, I'm pretty sure.
Well, yeah, and I definitely hope the best for him. I mean, he seemed like a talented kid.
He was really talented.
Coming in. So, you know, he'll make a splash somewhere, and hopefully it's somewhere not in the Big 12. That's all I can say.
we'll root for him wherever he goes.
For sure.
No reason not to.
For sure.
Is in my opinion, still not an alum, but he's got some TCU ties to him, so that's good. Some new offers going out this week. TCU's trying to pluck a guy from Baylor. It's Acero Kasten from a Weatherford 2021 safety. Like I said, a Baylor commit, 6'3", 195, has offers from Florida, Florida State, Miami, Ole Miss, and Texas Tech so far. But yeah, the Baylor commit, I think it'll be close down to the wire. He's from right down the road from here in Weatherford.
Yeah, them kangaroos, man.
A little bit further away from Baylor.
Shout out Tyler Luttrell. Shout out my wife.
There you go. So it's I think there's a chance here. I mean, if he wants to come play for the best defensive coach in the Big 12.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Mark Cohen tweeted earlier, you know, no Power 5 team, did he phrase it? No Power 5 team has led their conference in defense more.
TCU's done it five times, I think, since 2012, and no one else has done that. So, yeah, and you replied with the Big 12 doesn't play defense, but DCU does.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's darn right, man.
Yeah, but I think that national narrative has changed a little bit. I think offenses were down a little bit across the Big 12 last year, but I don't think the national narrative is changing, but I think I think the stats are no longer backing that up as much.
For sure, for sure. But stats don't always determine narrative.
Well, no, we know that to be true. It's true, 100% not true. But also, you had no quarterbacks returning last year too. You had Jalen Hurts was coming over. Sam Ellinger was like the best named quarterback returning. Brock Purdy still out there.
Yeah, key emphasis on name returning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think it's interesting to see how the Big 12 is going to. I mean, it's all going to be interesting. It's going to be real interesting this year. So, see how it goes. But Kasten's a name.
There is going to be no short of interesting this football season, man.
We've all survived 5 months. Good for us. We've got level 6 of 2020 is coming in a couple days. So get ready for that one.
Yeah.
Who knows what's happening next. Dax Courtney, a 2022
level 6.
You like that?
Yeah, who's the boss going to be in level 6?
Well, there are a bunch of memes that have implied some things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's there's some good memes out there. What's the next thing to come? So
yeah, I saw a TikTok about something like, you know, a time traveler drops in and it's like, what year is it? And they're like, 2020. And they're like, wait, the quarantine part or the zombie part? And then the person's like, their eyes get all wide. Like,
yeah. So who knows what's going to happen next month? Well, again, they're still waiting on the cicadas. This is their 17th year. This would be the year they would come out. So apparently that'll be wild whenever that happens. So get excited. Obviously, the locusts in Africa no one's talking about.
Yes.
So it's madness. It's going to get further madness here in a few short days, probably. Yep. That's how this year's going.
Jeez.
Dax Courtney, 2022 tight end from DeWitt, Arkansas. 6'6", 210 pounds. Talked to this kid a little bit the other day. Just seems like a really, really good, down-to-earth, humble kid.
Love it.
So, directly was very confident in the Christian part of TCU. Is a big factor for him.
Love it.
So let's see. Last year as a sophomore, because he's a 2022 guy, had 36 catches for 623 yards and 7 touchdowns. That's a big play guy. That's almost 20 yards a catch. That's 18-ish yards.
Dude, so sign me up. You've told me all I need to hear.
Fair enough. And so within about a 30-hour period, they got offers from TCU, Kansas, and Baylor all this week. So TCU was second. Kansas got them first. So.
Yeah, let's steer them away from that school down south.
fight them.
Yeah.
And then the other player I want to mention this week is a 2022 wide receiver, Andre Green Jr. from Richmond, Virginia.
I saw this 6'3",
180. He's got offers from pretty much everybody, Texas, USC, Oregon, Oklahoma, LSU, Georgia, and the list. And I'm like, okay, I'm not feeling too confident with that. But TCU's built a little bit over the Virginia pipeline with Altrick Barlow and Keontae Jenkins last year. So it's not unfathomable that he at least comes for a visit.
Well, yeah, and like Coach B said, I mean, we arguably have a better footprint and kind of perception among recruits outside of Texas. Mm-hmm. Than we actually do with recruits in Texas, which is funny because, you know, it used to be we were getting all of the 2 and 3 stars in Texas, and that was really our bread and butter, and now we're kind of reaching out in a different way. But what do we know about this guy? I mean, is he like, how many starsies? What's his height and weight?
Starsies?
Yeah.
6'3", 180. I think he will be a 4-star when it's all said and done. I don't think he's ranked yet. It's 2022 guy. So,
oh, 22.
Okay. Yeah, so it's still a ways away. I don't know if he's, actually I should check if he's got an actual star rating yet. There it is. With all the schools that offered him, he'll probably be a 4-star guy.
You would think.
Yeah, he's already listed as a 4-star. So not a total shocker there with 27 total offers. Looks like a big boy, man. Big boy. 6'3", 180, can go make a catch.
So he's an incoming junior.
Yeah, he'll be a junior this fall.
Yes. And you said he's 6'3", 180?
6'3", 180.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good.
That means he's tall, he can catch, he can fly.
Hey, if he can catch, that's all I need
to
hear.
That's all we need. That's what this offense needs. So that's why I like the kid in Dax Courtney. He seems to have good hands and a big play, a tight end guy. He could be the next Pro Wells, if you will.
Yeah.
So but again, Andre Green, if the offense shows out the next year or two, you get him to come visit. You get to see some Virginia boys with him, too. So
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Yeah,
and as far as guys who can catch, I mean, I don't think enough has been said about Doug Meacham coming back into the fold and how, you know, we've had all of these drops issues kind of since he's been gone.
Yeah.
So hopefully he's a big piece of that puzzle that can really correct that for the existing guys that we have. Run those drills, drill it into them, help them work on that. And then, yeah, you bring in more talented guys like this kid from Virginia.
Yeah.
Keep the thing going.
Mm-hmm. And Malcolm Kelly coming to his second year with TCU.
Yes, Malcolm Kelly. And, that's huge.
That's huge. He's a great recruiter as well. So he's going to help blow this thing up and Meacham coming back. I think a lot of the – talk about Meacham's not getting much of the hype.
He really isn't.
It's all been about Jerry Kill. He's an old man. He can't run an offense,
yeah,
people say.
Yes. Many are saying.
Many people say. But yeah, it's Meacham again. Meacham was there in 2014 and 2015. So
yeah, I don't know where all of the doom and gloom and the apocalyptic.
No, it's from Jerry Kill being an old man, and it's cool to have the Sean McVay type, the Cliff Kingsbury type.
As we raise our shoulders and snap.
the young sexy offensive mind.
We're really
coach
plugged
gurus.
Into the cool.
I don't know. That's so fetch. Is that what the kids are saying nowadays?
Stop trying to make fetch happen. Ah, it's never going to happen.
But yeah, I think it's all the focus of cool. GP Brasley brought an offensive version of himself in. He's old. He can't do it anymore. Yada, yada, yada. That's just not the case.
Hey, I dare you to say that about Coach B. He's old and he can't do it anymore.
Sell that to his face. And
yeah.
But yeah.
You'll be like in Endgame. You'll just evaporate into bits.
He'll turn you
into
dust. He'll
stare at you and
you'll
just be destroyed.
Yeah, well.
He'll be dissipated.
But I think, I mean, we don't have a choice. I want to see it happen. I want to see how things go this year. Hopefully there's football. We'll get to that a little bit later.
Looks like there will be.
I think there'll be football. I don't think there'll be baseball anymore. Now I'm much more concerned about baseball not happening.
Dude, the way the MLB is going,
it's
so frustrating to watch. As you wear your Ranger shirt here today, and I strongly considered putting on a Ranger shirt today. But like, man, and a lot of people have said this on social media. I know we're chasing a rabbit here. But, you know, baseball has already lost so many young fans.
Yeah.
If they are really going to stick to this fight about dollars and cents and refuse to come back, I mean, they're going to lose so many people.
Well,
people are going to be like, who cares?
Here's the thing. It's at this point, the players have already agreed to two pay cuts for this year. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like it's not on them anymore to accept any more pay cuts. Now the owners are trying to get them to take another pay cut. And and I wouldn't if I were them either. Trout's going to go from making $35 million to $7
million. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, boo-hoo, he's going to make $7 million.
But when you're living that, I mean, that is a big
jump. You're losing 80% of
your... You have to think of things relatively.
Yeah, if you lost 80% of your pay, right, which a lot of people did right now.
Yes.
So 80 to 100%. So
yeah.
A lot of people are struggling right now, so it looks dumb to argue about millions of dollars. But at the same time, you've got to realize that the players are already giving a lot.
Yeah.
And the owners will keep asking for more.
And, like, you know, I understand to the owner's credit, like, there's tons of operating costs when you're talking about your entire farm system, and you're also talking about, with, at best, limited attendance, you're talking about losing millions and millions of dollars. But still, you know, from an owner's perspective, you have to think about, like, okay, which is better, for me to take a little bit of a hit here, like, eat just a little bit, and we still have a season, and I recoup some of this loss, or I recoup none of this loss because we do not have a season? Because they still have to pay their players.
No, they do, but also, but suddenly you don't have to pay for, if they don't have a season, you don't have to pay for, like, the energy at the stadium, you don't have to pay for... everyone that works at the facilities, you're furloughing everybody. Like, a lot of owners, I think are fine with not playing a season. Like, owners for not necessarily the Royals, but the Royals are a small market. The A's, like, these, they will...
That aren't going to get a big TV cut.
They will lose nothing by not playing the season. They're like, we just won't play. It's fine.
Yeah.
No sweat off our back because they don't lose any money that way. So, it's a disaster. And hopefully... baseball comes back soon. I guess disaster's not the right word to talk about. I just want to watch some sports. But
yeah.
It's
frustrating.
I had hoped. I had been clinging to a hope that a 4th of July opening day was going to happen. But
that's what I was hoping for, too. And, yeah, it's looking more and more in doubt.
Unlikely. But we'll get basketball back, sounds like, by end of July, it sounds like.
Yeah, and the plans look really interesting.
They're not good for the Mavericks. Have you seen this?
Wait, no. What about
so
the Mavericks?
So they're going to do – one of the things is – either go straight to the playoffs with just the way it is. They'll bring everyone back to play like five games and try and...
Which Damian Lillard is very much not in favor of.
Well, Damian Lillard is for that because that gives him a chance to make the playoffs.
No, but I'm saying if they come back straight to playoffs.
Oh, yeah. He's out. But again, the Blazers would be out.
Yeah,
so it
exactly.
doesn't matter what he thinks, honestly,
yeah.
in that case, because they would be out. So, I wouldn't want that plan either. What they're thinking about doing is taking like... the top 20 teams overall, the top eight from each, or the top 20 teams overall, and then making the bottom four or bottom eight play like a
play-in series.
And so the Mavericks would have the best record of the teams will have to play in on that. So, but that's a that's also an effort to maybe get the Pelicans in the playoffs because they have Zion Williamson. So it's an effort of who you want to – people are going to watch it. I don't think you need Zion to draw this right
now. Yeah, literally. People if you put American sports on TV, people are tuning
people
in.
People watch The Last Dance, and that was 20, 30 years old now.
Yeah, so. Well, and shoot, the NFL draft. I mean, the NFL draft always gets a pretty large viewing audience. I mean, I watch it every single year. But people were so starved for a live sports event this year. I mean, you had record-breaking people tuning in.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put, like – honestly, even if you had Scabs playing, like, and just put them in NBA jerseys, like, people would tune into it. You know what I mean?
I was thinking of, like, actual on-your-skin Scabs. I was like, why would we want to do this? I wouldn't turn into that.
just a bunch of professional Scab picking.
What were the people that were losing limbs and fingers and stuff?
Diabetic?
No. Lepers.
Oh, yes.
Lepers. Okay. I wouldn't watch lepers play sports.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Anyway, back to baseball in a way. I think it's official. All the players are returning for 2021. Not a big surprise. We expected all this. But Austin Henry, Hunter Wolf, Connor Shepherd, Zach Humphries, Charlie King, Halen Green, Dalton Brown are all seniors getting an extra year.
Get the gang back together.
Pretty much. And then a subtle segue into our baseball uniform bracket. So not a whole lot of surprises in the first round.
No, yeah. I mean, mostly higher seeds. Good job us.
Good job us.
For, like, ranking them pretty well this time.
The one thing was it the gothic ones that no one liked? And I was like, man, I kind of dig the gothic ones.
Yeah, no one liked the gothic ones.
No one likes the gothic ones.
But. I mean, I can see why people went in favor of the other ones. The gothic, it reminds me of, and I know I said this to you when we were looking through all these, it reminds me a lot of Rice, actually.
Yeah.
And it's really not our style, you know, to have the gothic. But you gotta love that puppy, though. The one gothic team.
But I was very proud of the 1910 team. They only lost 53-47.
Yeah, they put up a fight, man.
That's a good looking jersey, man. That's a good looking jersey. I think when I initially sent this to you, I had them much higher in my bracket.
Yeah, you did. I put them down a little bit lower.
You moved them a little bit, but so we just.
It also had to do with how I set up the regions. Yeah, you know, where it made sense.
Tweaked the regions to make more sense versus me just like, here's what I like.
Yeah,
I like this the best. Go with this.
But that was a good roadmap, though.
It was a good roadmap for us. So yeah. So the Gothics were I think they're the only two top higher seeds that got knocked out.
Let me look back at the.
I think everyone. I think 1-4 won everywhere else, and those two was the 5 and the 6 that beat the 4 and the 3.
Yeah, I'm pulling up the bracket again just so I can have it as a visual aid here. There's the one I sent.
I'm sitting there looking at it.
Okay. Yeah. So. That 6 seed. Yeah, because we weren't very high. That's the big upset of the whole tournament is that 6 seed, the 80s white with the arch frogs and the stair step TCU, which also wore the flying T helmet.
Yes.
By the way.
That's probably why that one advanced.
You know, people, it's
people
divisive,
love the flying T.
But people also hate the flying T. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm not surprised by the 5th seed. Underline TCU winning on that white throwback bracket, because that was one that I was always thinking, like, this, if there's one lower seed that can make a run, it's this one, because it's got that super, it's a clean look overall with the underline TCU and not the big bulky horn frogs in it, and it's got that super campy awesome little horn frog wearing a baseball hat and a mitt tossing a baseball on the sleeve.
It's got a shot.
Yeah. It's got a shot to make a little bit of a run.
It's going against the number 1 seed Script Frogs, though.
We'll see how that goes. The second round's going to be interesting.
Yeah. And then over here in the modern colorful region, the black curse of horn frogs beat the frogs in Jay's font, which I think I had ranked higher. I think you might have moved that down.
Yeah,
I don't know why you like the Jay's font so much.
One of my friends likes the Blue Jays font. I was never that big of a fan.
I think it's terrible.
Yeah.
I had them, I think when I sent them to you, I had them like the 16 overall or whatever.
No, you actually had them surprisingly high.
Oh, okay.
Well, you had the purple one high.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was like, Billy likes it. Well, I guess I must have misunderstood because I was like, Billy likes it. I guess I'll give him a 4 seed.
I did like at midnight and sent it to you. I don't remember. Yeah. But yes, the black cursor horn frogs, I like that look a lot.
Yes, so. With the gold outline. Yeah. That's pretty interesting.
So yeah, so get ready for Monday. Get your clickers ready, and Monday
we're
gonna vote on the modern home white uniform. So
and we're working on the offensive line tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it all ranked. I've got the tournament bracket ready to go. I'm just working on some graphics.
The graphics you have are really cool.
Well, thank you, Bill.
They look. You put a lot of work into it.
Yes. I'm trying in my the little. bitty bits of spare time that I have had lately, trying to put together these graphics that really give you a clear picture of who was a part of this offensive line from the year, what were their individual accomplishments, you know, because we can go in saying, like, okay, we know what the record was in 2017. We know that that team was good at rushing.
Yeah.
But how did these guys break down on an individual level? Who of them made it to the pros? Who of them got all-conference or all-American recognition? Mm-hmm. What was their size and weight? You know, that because that's a big thing, too. You can look at one offensive line and be like, dang, those dudes were all over 6'5 and, you know, like 300 pounds versus like, oh, okay, this was more of a, like, you know, more athletic, smaller offensive line that we had from this year. So I'm trying to do that to help people make a more informed decision, yes. Have a little more fun with a bracket. It's just taking me a little bit of time to complete it.
And but I think it is coming. Worth it. So hopefully next week or the week after, we'll get you some football stuff to vote on. As we continue offensive line, love week, as we get into some numbers here.
This is going
to
be offensive line appreciation summer, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So you've heard of hot girl summer? Yeah. This is O-line summer
this
now.
This is big boy summer.
Big boy summer. As the way quarantine's going for a lot of us, it pretty much is. So no surprise there. But yeah, we'll get into some more big boys here on the numbers 71 through 80 as we go through the best ever frogs to wear certain numbers.
Yes. Okay, so let's do get into numbers. As I unlock my phone here to pull up my list. That caught me off guard,
Billy. That was a very fast segue. I apologize. Yes.
Oh, no, it's all good. So, 70s. Let's start, why don't we? Number 71, I actually made a little bit of a mistake here. I gave an honorable mention 71 to someone who did not wear 71, as I recall.
I was confused looking at the notes. Like, oh, okay. We're only giving one guy with it. I saw like three guys listed on Jenkins' list.
Yes. So I had originally written down Zach Roth as an honorable mention 71, but he wore 70, actually, that Rose Bowl season. And I am mortified at my mistake that I've only just now noticed.
And no one would have said anything ever about it if you hadn't just said it right
there. Well,
no one would have noticed except you.
But I
noticed it, but I wasn't going
to
say
it. I want y'all all to understand and recognize my humanity. My mortality, my sin nature here in this moment.
Wow,
that's
a little strong. But
forgive me for this. I figured it was worth mentioning too, so that it didn't end up posted on Rivals, and then
yes.
Billy gets some hate for it. Like, Billy, what have you done? And it's like, it's all my fault. Oh, okay,
I haven't gotten too much hate from anything yet.
Well, good. That's good.
Not from this anyway.
That's good. Well, either way, your best 71 of all time has to go to Darrell Palmer. Okay, he was a lineman for the Frogs from 1940 to 1942, also known as Big D because of his imposing size at the time. He was really one of the great, great tackles of the Southwest Conference, especially in that decade of the 40s. He was All-American in 1942, All-Southwest Conference in 1941 and 42. So, you know, you're talking about a linchpin of those early 40s TCU offensive lines and definitely deserving of that number 71, since I clearly couldn't think of anyone else.
Well, Charlie Davis, Don Jackson, Barrett Robbins were the other players listed on Dan Jenkins' list. And,
yes.
And we're not going to question Dan Jenkins.
So certainly not. Yeah, so. Yeah, it's worth noting that I have used Dan Jenkins liberally as a resource for this list.
Yes, he did this in 2007 or 2008, I think.
Yeah, I think it was like 06. It was like, still like the
mid-2000s. So we've introduced some newer players since then. But Andy Dalton wasn't on there yet.
Right.
We had to throw Dalton on there. So
yes.
We got a player coming up in a minute that wasn't on there, number 74. But first is 72, one of the top five players in TCU history.
Oh, yeah, easily. I think there's an argument for this guy to be on the Mount Rushmore as, you know, that number four spot. Honorable mention, though, goes to Michael Tudose.
Great fan of his.
Yes, awesome dude. He was the left tackle on that 2005 TCU team that had so much success. Features prominently in our bracket that we're working on for the 16 best offensive lines if Coach P's tenure. But your best 72 of all time, it's Mr. Cowboy himself, Bob Lilly.
Yep.
And somebody that we were so hoping to get to talk to this week.
Yeah, we got the phone number, very excited. Number is not working anymore currently. So it's a bummer. We thought, oh my God, we're going to get Bob Lilly on the phone? We were freaking out, and then to no avail. But yeah. What, he won a tie of the Southwest Conference title, received all Southwest Conference honors on a defense that allowed only 8 points per game in 59, was an All-American in 60, and obviously was the first pick ever in the Dallas Cowboys history. First draft pick ever.
Yeah, first draft pick ever for the Cowboys. I think he's the Cowboys' only retired number. His 74 is.
Well, it's. I was doing some research on this because in case we got Lily on the phone, I wanted to have this ready.
Right.
His number's officially not retired, but he's the only person that's ever worn it.
Oh.
So it's in the Ring of Honor. It's only ever been worn other times in like preseason games. It's never been worn in a regular season game except for Bob Lilly.
I gotcha.
Because they don't retire. I don't think they retire numbers per se. They just have some numbers in the Ring of Honor.
Well, dude's a legend. I mean, he's absolutely. I mean, he was All American in 1960 for TCU. He was, and you know, a lot of people actually forget, and we'll talk about this guy a little bit later in this list. Him and Don Floyd together were both defensive tackles on that Abe Martin defense. You want to talk about like a terrifying duo. Bob Lilly gets all of the credit because of his legendary status and Mr. Cowboy and all of this stuff and the Super Bowl rings. But Don Floyd was really dang good too. I mean, you're talking about the 1960s equivalent, except for way better, of, you know, we were all hyped about Ross Blacklock and Corey Bethley playing together as defensive tackles. I mean,
this is what it was in the 50s.
In the 60s, yeah, except for like maximize it because, you know, Bob Lilly ended up being, you know, well, and who knows? Ross Blacklock could be that too.
I mean, we can come back to 73, 74. 75 is Don Floyd.
Yes.
And as Dan Jenkins wrote, paired with Bob Lilly to form arguably the most formidable defensive tackle tandem in the history of the Southwest Conference.
Yeah. I mean, just struck fear into the hearts of quarterbacks and running backs very much so. Yeah.
He's an All-American in 58 and 59. It's one of just six TCU players to earn All-American honors twice.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing. That's why, you know, I say a lot of people forget about Don Floyd because you think of Bob Lilly, and Don Floyd was an All-American too. He played for the Oilers for a long time.
Like, I was guilty of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And poor Don Floyd. I mean, hey, give Don Floyd some appreciation.
He was Corey Bethley to Ross Blacklock,
for sure. Yeah. For sure. Absolutely. And now, of course, you know, back to giving Bob Lilly more love. I mean, read the book about him if you haven't. That's actually the one time that I got the pleasure of meeting Bob Lilly. I went to his book signing. Mm. And, you know, he's got a really cool life story. And Brick coming up, he was from Throckmorton, briefly lived in Oregon as a teenager, then moved back to Texas and ends up at TCU. And it talks about how Abe Martin recruited him and his time at TCU and then his time with the Cowboys. And, you know, the Cowboys back in those years when Bob Lilly was the man there were – everyone talked about them as the bridesmaids of the NFL. They're like, okay, well, they're next year's team. They're next year's team because they kept losing to the Packers in either the championship game or eventually the NFC championship game in those early Super Bowl years. Or then they'd lose to the Colts in the Super Bowl. Or, you know, they'd just be so close every single year. And then he talks about finally getting over that hump in 71, that great team that that beat the Dolphins in that first Cowboys Super Bowl that then, you know, laid the groundwork for, you know, the Cowboys as being the – you know, five Super Bowl winning team that people all think of them now. Because back then it was a totally different story. It was like, oh man, the Cowboys are great. Tom Landry's great. But when are they ever going to win a trophy? Who knows? You know? And they finally got over that hump, thanks in large part to Bob Lilly.
So you can get the Bob Lilly Reflections book for $8 on Amazon right now.
There you go. So there you go. Or if you want to come by my house, you can borrow it.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. And Clint will sign it for you.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. Happy to sign my copy of the Bob Lilly book. Okay, so moving on to 73. Worth honorable mention for sure is Eric Tausch. Mm-hmm. Played center and guard for the Frogs in the early 2010s, like 2012, 2013. Really good dude. Also a really quality player for the Frogs. But and some others worth mentioning, you know, like we talked about Dan Jenkins mentions. Brian Brazil was an offensive tackle in the 80s. Bobby Plummer, defensive tackle in the early 60s. Also, another guy featuring into our offensive line bracket, Jamal Powell, center for the Frogs in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. 2001, 2002. Definitely 2001. I can't remember if he played in 2002. No, I'm blanking. But
2002, according to this
list. Yes. Okay. There you go. He was a really solid center for the Frogs, and I think he's coaching now. Actually, maybe even for SMU, if I remember correctly. But your best 73 of all time has to go to Norm Evans. Norman Evans from 1962 to 1964, one of three TCU offensive linemen to be named All Southwest Conference in 1964. So, you know, part of a really solid group there his senior season.
I'm trying to see if he's still on the staff at SMU, because he was for a hot minute. But he also popped up. Oh, yeah, so he was a Lamar before then. Yes, he's currently on the SMU staff. So
there you go.
There you go.
A crisis of conscience, I would imagine. So, 74 now, moving on. Big honorable mention. You know, we talk a lot about the Schobel family on this list, and the Matt Schobels and Bo Schobels and Aaron Schobels, and how great they were for the Frogs. But long before them came Bob Schobel, who was a defensive end for the Frogs, 69-71. Really quality player for TCU. Definitely deserving of honorable mention 1974, if for no other reason, for the legacy that he established. You know, those Schobels were huge for the Frogs in the early 2000s. But I think your best 74 of all time is got to go to Big V.
Big V!
Halapulavati Vaitai.
I hadn't typed it in so long till this week, trying to type it in there, and I butchered it. Perfectly.
Dude, it's difficult. Yeah. I mean, but there's no way around it.
He was second team All Big 12 as a junior and senior year in 2014 and 15. Obviously, we all remember the success those teams had in those 2 years. So, and also just signed a 5-year, $45 million deal with the Lions. So.
Yeah, dude is making big money in the NFL.
Yep.
He's a big guy. Big, you know, he's part of that offense, O-line U, that we all have been talking about so much. And
also got a ring from Philadelphia too.
Yes, yeah. Super Bowl champion as well. As much as
also possibly the nicest former player I've ever met in my entire life.
Oh, Big V's the man.
Even when, like, interviewing when he was a player and all that stuff, he's just a super, super nice guy.
So. Yes, for sure. Let's see, so 30, 40, 50. Yeah, okay, so I guess he was a freshman when I was a senior, because we did overlap briefly, but I remember him being just such a nice guy.
Yeah, he's the nicest guy.
Yeah, out of Haltom City, I think, is where he's from. Yeah. So Big V, your best 74 of all time. And then 75, we already mentioned Don Floyd. Absolutely deserving there. A couple of honorable mentions for you, though. Chase Johnson was a center for the Frogs, 2003-2004, All-Conference USA. Also Norm Hamilton, deserving of honorable mention there. And that'll bring us then to 76.
This is also a slam dunk.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if any of y'all are even pausing for a moment to think, like,
well, they might not remember what number he was.
That's true.
When you hear the names, like, oh, yeah, obviously.
That's true. Well, before we get to him, I mean, your honorable mention, Chad Pugh was an honorable mention 76. He was a defensive tackle for the Frogs 2000-2003, those Conference USA years. He was really that guy who would get in there as a nose tackle, mix it up, you know, kind of a linchpin of that defensive line and one of those first great Coach P defensive teams. But your best 76, Remington Trophy winner, former high school basketball player, an all-around amazing dude, Jake Kirkpatrick.
Yeah. He's up there with Big V as far as being the nicest guys alive.
Dude, yes. Literally amazing. Yes. And, you know, center for the 2009 offensive line, which is massively overrated. Center for the
overrated?
Rose Bowl. Underrated is what I meant to say.
I was like, oh.
Massively underrated. Excuse me. Center for the Rose Bowl winning team. Remington Trophy Award winner, All-American. Also, as I was getting ready to get married in college, Jake had already gotten married as well, and he gave me some advice in that area. He was like, oh, and this is some things you should do. Here's some places you can look at living, ways you can save money. You know, all around just amazing guy.
Yeah, his wife, Callie, was a classmate of mine in the journalism school at TCU.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so we go back, too.
That's cool, man. Yeah, and Jake, you know, briefly played in the NFL, kind of surprising that he didn't have as much staying power as my thought. But, you know, I mean, honestly, you look at how successful Jake Kirkpatrick is. So he's another one of those just like textbook Gary Patterson finds where he'd like barely even put on pads his entire life until he comes to TCU. And it's like, you are going to be a center.
And you'll be the best in the country.
And you will be amazing at it. And
I was trying to remember when I ran into him the most recently. I think it was in 2015. Might have been 2014. It was at Frog Fest before this. I think it was before the season started. They have the big bouncy house thing, but it was like the Heisman House was coming to visit. It must have been 15 because after 14 was such a good year.
Yeah, and Trey was in the running for the Heisman.
Yeah, so the Heisman was there. I took a picture with the Heisman Trophy basically, and I was like, oh, and you get an autograph from a former Frog player. Where I was like, okay, I'll just check this out. Jake was the guy sitting in there next to the Heisman signing autographs, like autograph pictures and stuff. So that's what I ran into Jake within the last 5 years or so. Also a super nice dude. So
well, you know, you can see Davey O'Brien's Heisman too. At the Hall of Fame at TC right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's there, but it was kind of cool. I don't know. I was like, I'm gonna check this out, see what it is, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm sitting there in the quote unquote Heisman House.
Yeah,
that I was in town visiting and all that stuff. So yeah, Jake, super awesome dude.
Much love to Jake Kirkpatrick if he's listening. Is no contest for the best 76 of all time. No contest at all. Okay, so 77 now. And this is a strong offensive line number.
Good group.
Yeah, good little group here. So honorable mention, one's got to go to Jamel Naff,
yep.
A big piece on those offensive lines in 2014-15, as you were talking about. Lucas Niang, anybody remember him?
Do you think if he had finished this season, do you think you would have given him this number?
I battled over whether or not to give it to Lucas Niang or to the person that I actually gave it to.
Yeah.
And... you know, that's a good hypothetical. I wonder if, you know, honestly...
if he finished the season in TCU and he wins all Big 12, or if he's first team all Big 12, and they go to a bowl game...
then yes, I probably give
probably,
it to
probably
him. But honestly, I mean, the way his senior year did play out, it's just as much of an argument in favor of him.
Yeah.
Which is why I struggled so hard, because I was like, you look at the difference in the TCU offensive line before and after his injury.
Well, they were like 4-2 with him and 1-5 without him or something like
that.
Well,
and just the eyeball test of like breakdowns and blocking and, you know, how dominant we were up front and whether or not we were getting pushed back. I mean, Lucas Niang and whether or not Max was under pressure. I mean, the difference before and after Niang was marked.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's why I really battled with whether or not to give it to him. But ultimately, I gave it to Mike Sullivan, who I believe, if he doesn't listen to the podcast, I think I've seen him commenting on some of our tweets.
Oh, yeah.
I assume it's the same Mike Sullivan.
Probably. Can't be too many of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know. but he was a guard for the Frogs, 87-90. Here's why I ended up going with him. So, first of all, I mean, he was one who came in as a really highly touted recruit. He was a blue chip coming in, which wasn't something that the Frogs necessarily got all that often, particularly after they stopped paying players in 1985. So he actually went on to be freshman All-American his first season, then first team All-Southwest Conference in 89 and 90. So, you know, just the being freshman All-American, I was like, okay, that's a big pro in
that's
his
huge,
favor.
Huge one.
And then All-Southwest Conference in back-to-back years, I'm like, okay. And so that's why, like you say, if Lucas Niang had finished and he'd gotten first team All-Big 12, like, ugh, okay, then that decision becomes that much more complicated and hard. But I feel like Sully is very
disagreeable. Can't argue with that.
Yes.
Yeah, can't argue with that.
Okay, well, I'm glad you don't feel like you can argue.
I can't argue with that. I like it, but I think it's if Niang had chose to finish this season and TCU had been more successful, maybe it's a conversation. But
yeah,
it's not a conversation
for sure. And I think Lucas Niang made the right decision. I mean, you know, now he's going to have the opportunity to have a longer pro career with the Chiefs, hopefully. So,
yep.
So 78 now. Honorable mentions for you. Josh Vernon absolutely deserves some honorable mention. A guard on that Rose Bowl offensive line. Really good player on that one. Victor Payne.
Mm-hmm.
He was an offensive lineman during the LT years and then bleeding into the 2000s. Really, really solid starter for the Frogs. They're one of those big uglies, as LT called them. But I think your best 78 has to go to Herb Taylor.
Yep.
Guy who I believe is a barbecue magnate now. Am I correct in remembering that?
I don't know.
Maybe. I think he's got... I think last I looked, he had a barbecue restaurant there or something like that. But you may remember him, those of you who may remember him, from his sunglasses in his headshot or his goggles that he wore while he played. He was a consistent member of that offensive line all 4 years, from freshman to senior year. So he's another one who's featuring very prominently in this offensive line bracket. A lot of all Mountain West Conference selections, first team, and ended up playing in the NFL for a good little while as well.
He is a co-owner of Ray's Real Pit Barbecue in Houston.
There you go.
So there you go.
There you go.
Something as of 2014 anyway, I'm sure. I mean, probably still is.
Hopefully. Hopefully COVID hasn't impacted that too terribly much.
Okay, that was more elaborate than I thought it would be, but yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking.
I mean, yeah, man, it's very possible. Who knows?
Yeah.
Very possible.
Just how the economic impact has been for a lot of small business owners.
Yeah, it's true.
But anyway, regardless of his current prospects, he's your best 78 in TCU history.
He started every game all 4 years. So.
Yes, every game. And, you know, anytime you're coming in and making a significant impact as a freshman, much less being an every game starter, I mean, come
deal.
On. That kind of speaks for itself, just like it did for Mike Sullivan as a freshman All-American.
There you go.
That brings us now to 79. So your best 79 of all time. I couldn't. Well, you know what? One honorable mention, I believe, could go to Nick Richmond. He was a member of those Frog offensive lines. I think he was a starter in 07. Really big dude, like 6'8", 6'9", about 300 pounds, and you know, big contributor on those offensive lines. But your best 79. And this is courtesy of Dan Jenkins. Yeah.
I'd never heard of the guy until
I'd never heard of him either. But Scratch Edwards, Weldon Scratch Edwards. He was a tackle for the Frogs in 46 and 47, all Southwest Conference in 46. And his senior year in 47, that was the year the Frogs went to the Delta Bowl, which bowls were few and far between for a lot of TCU history. He was one of the offensive line playing in front of Lindy Berry, which we talked about him earlier in the list. Just tough as nails quarterback for the Frogs and one who's often overlooked. But Scratch Edwards, your best 79 of all time.
There you go.
And that brings us now to our last one, number 80. And all of this offensive line love, we're going to shift positions now, ever so slightly, to tight ends, okay? So honorable mention, you got to give some love to Logan Brock. He was a number 80 for the Frogs around that Rose Bowl time. Really, really talented tight end who was, like so many tight ends in TCU history, a little bit underutilized, to be completely honest.
Well, yeah, most of them have been.
Yeah, but really, brother of Tanner Brock, obviously. I mean, those Brock brothers are all three very good football players. Yeah. And Logan was had the most long-standing and best career with TCU. But your best 80 of all time, and another one that I would have loved to talk to, but yeah. It's just a little difficult, is Coach Dan Sharp for the Frogs, who was a tight end for TCU in the 80s and actually had a game-winning touchdown catch against Arkansas that broke a 27-game losing streak to Arkansas. It was 20-something, 23, 24, 27, something like mm-hmm. that. And Dan Sharp had the game-winning touchdown catch. And, now he went on from being a solid player at tight end for the Frogs to, like Jamie Dixon and others, now being a longtime coach of the Frogs and a dang good recruiter, too.
So about another thing about that Arkansas catch that he had, that gave them a bowl game berth. It was their first bowl game in 19 years.
Yeah, the Blue Bonnet Bowl in 84. Yeah.
So that we're talking about the Dust Bowl being few and far between. Yes. Yeah. They went 19 years without a bowl game.
Can you even imagine, man?
I can't imagine that.
My family was sticking through it. sticking through all of that.
Nowadays.
Oh, geez,
he had 63 catches, 877 yards, and 8 touchdowns in his career. He's been on GP staff the last 20 years as a defensive line coach since 2015. He's also on the TCU coaching staff from 89 to 97 before taking a cup of coffee at Tulsa for a hot minute.
Yeah. So, I mean, you gotta love that, man. That's a TCU legacy right there.
Oh yeah, he's been involved with TCU pretty much since 1980 for the last 40 years,
and
for all of like 5 years of the last 40. Yeah,
and super fun guy. Like if you ever get a chance to talk to Coach Sharp, I mean, he's funny and he's fun as all get out, and he's a good coach. Like I said, a dang good recruiter.
Talking about the defensive line, it's usually the position we believe in the most at TCU.
Which is now, ever since Coach Bumpus retired, that's been his baby. Him and Zarnell Fitch are working that defensive line. So Dan Sharp appreciation right there.
Yeah, no, he's great. No doubt about that.
I want to look up and verify exactly how long that losing streak to Arkansas was, because I know it was over 20 that when Dan Sharp finally, helped get us over the hump and beat them that year.
It's probably lengthy.
Yeah, I think it was 27.
Anyway, so they were, that's a previous game. God, they had 22 games.
22.
From 1959 to 1980.
Man.
And they lost 22 consecutive games.
Jeez.
All-time TCU is 23-43 against Arkansas.
Yeah. It's nice to get that one.
That's all that matters.
I was pumped about that.
Yeah. I was a fun game to be at, too.
Yes.
All right. Twitter questions.
It's time
for Twitter questions.
Let's all right. do it.
Bayou City Frog, what are your thoughts on the mini camp option to re-acclimatize players? So I haven't heard much about this recently, but essentially what it was, the NCAA is thinking to allow some type of mini camp in June or July to make up for spring practices. Basically, like a padless couple extra practices of workouts. So I don't know if it's been approved or not approved, but it's going to be just a way to kind of get them back going because no one had spring practice for very long. So
I am in the same boat as any coach on this topic, I'm sure. That more practice is never a bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
And especially if you've got as quality of a head coach as Coach Patterson and as well as he's able to prepare players, when he's got a long time to do so. Now, I did kind of like having the edge on a lot of Big 12 competition that we had that 1 week of spring and a lot didn't have any at all. Well, so it'd be kind of a shame to forsake that, but hey, more practice is always a good thing.
Yeah, no, give GP an extra 2 weeks of practice somewhere in June, somewhere in before August. He'll take advantage of it, no doubt. But that's kind of changed a little bit because the Big 12 has said that June 15th is when players can return for voluntary workouts. So odds are that'll happen in July. And we can just get into Bayou City's. He's got a question here in a minute, but this one is: if you had to draw up your own plan to bring players back, get them ready for the fall, what would it be? I would just say start in mid-July.
Yeah, and like, just go straight through.
Go straight through.
Yeah, it seems the most easy.
It seems like we can start practice July 15th or 20th, whatever that Monday is. I don't know, like the third Monday in July, and just go. And
well, and the thing is, guys are typically in a typical situation are on or around campus anyway, because they're doing summer school and they're doing workouts. So yeah, just go ahead and I like that. Just start a little bit earlier and just go straight through.
Yeah, July 20th is a Monday, so I would just be like, everyone can come back July 20th for start practices, and you have 6 weeks of practice before the season gets going. Mm. That'd be my ideal way of doing it. You have 2 weeks in June, then nothing in July, then we start in August, and I'm like, just start in late July and go.
Yeah. Plus, you know, you run the risk of, you know, it's kind of like back when we were in school, you know, and you have summer and you forget everything you learned.
Yeah, that's true.
If you come in June, it's like, oh, all of that already fell out of my head.
It's all
like,
gone.
So it's just complete waste.
And it'll be even more so this year.
Yes, for sure. So, yeah, just make it one continuous long deal.
How much are you worried about injuries after the break? It's the same for everybody.
Yeah, I don't think it's any more of a risk than it ever is. Yeah. I mean, injuries are what they are.
It might be slightly more, but it's also the same for everybody.
Yeah.
It's not like TCU's at a major disadvantage here. It's everyone's. No one's been at practice or no one's been on campus for 3 months now.
So. Yeah. Well, and so much of injuries is random and due to luck. Yeah. But, you know, it also comes down. There also is an individual component where it's like, okay, well, you know, were you willing to put in the work during this off time? Were you willing to continue to lift weights and condition yourself? Yeah, or were you just chilling on the couch drinking beer? Well, they shouldn't have been doing that.
Yeah. But, seniors could have been.
Yeah, seniors could have been. Eating Cheetos, I don't know. Cheez-Its, they'd be eating Cheez-Its, let's be real.
R.I.P. Cheez-A-Bowl to Orlando.
Yes. Wow, man, end of an era, you know?
Yeah, the illustrious era. Well, I mean, TCU could wind up there again. Who knows? It's not like it's leaving the Big 12 tie. It's just moving to Orlando.
Yes.
But yeah, so it depends on how much guys were working in these last couple months, and if they were working, they shouldn't be too much of a problem.
Yep.
And lastly, from Bayou City Frog, if you're still a student, would you like or dislike the new fall schedule? So I don't know if you've seen how this campus is going to work in the fall. They're basically starting school a week earlier on August 17th, and on-campus classes end November 24th before Thanksgiving. There'll be 2 days of Saturday school somewhere in there, I think. Also no Labor Day holiday, I think.
Okay, and then it's finals are from home, right?
I'm assuming
or
so.
Online, I guess.
I assume so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine with me, you know. I mean,
yeah, there's no fall break. I mean, I don't know. I think in the fall it's easier because you have football on Saturdays.
Yeah.
So be like, I have something to look forward to. Like in the spring you obviously have baseball, stuff like that, but people get hyped for football on Saturdays in the fall. We don't get a fall break, whoop-de-doo. We're gonna go to the football game. Or maybe,
let's reduce the... Well, of course, we don't know if it's going to be... how much capacity is going to be allowed. But in a normal season, I'd be like, good, there's no fall break. We're not going to have a half-empty student section.
Yeah, it's true.
Because everyone went home.
True. Still might be a three-quarters empty one this year, but whatever.
Man, I don't know. Like, I know that this is a big thing that Donati and a lot of people are talking about and thinking about, but... We have so many season ticket holders. Last I looked, there was 30,000 season ticket holders. And you're talking about a stadium capacity of just under 50.
Yeah.
So if you're going to limit it to even 50% capacity, you're talking about season ticket holders who aren't allowed to come to games. How do you make that decision?
I think is going towards, in Texas anyway, the fall will be as normal.
Yeah.
I mean, they've already said, what do you say today? Abbott said June 1st. You can have pro sports with 25% capacity,
mm-hmm.
and it's still June 1st. You'll have 2 more months,
yeah.
3 more months, June, July, and August to get up to full or three quarters or whatever. I think it'll be full go by August.
Well, you make a good point, and if 2020 has taught us anything, it's that news changes quickly.
It changes quickly, but also I feel like Texas has, and it's different. It was like Texas got opener up, whatever. It's different on a totally state-by-state basis. New York got hit crazy hard. California got hit kind of hard.
Yeah.
Texas, it's been relatively minor.
Yeah.
So is less of a hot. But Louisiana got killed because it was right when Mardi Gras was happening. Yes. So it's when Texas hasn't had anything big events like that. So there was no Cowboy Super Bowl parade to celebrate. There was no...
Shit. Yeah, thanks for twisting the knife there.
Just saying. But yeah, it's been relatively a much smaller issue in Texas. That's why I think if you need to come... I think it'll be better 3 months from now in Texas. I kind of think it'll be full go. I'm not saying I agree or disagree with that. That is what I think it will be.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I had to guess right now.
Well, I mean, it'd certainly be... Because, you know, just on a practicality standpoint, like, if you're someone who has bought season tickets and then is told, like, hey, yeah, sorry, you can't come to any of the games, or you can come to one game.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a WTF, mate.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, like, it's a slap in the face. But at the same time, I'm hoping people realize that this is a once in a hopefully lifetime occurrence. Yeah. And people are suffering right now. A lot of people have lost their loved ones and lost things like that. And like, I don't think I've said this on the show before. My grandpa had it. He's now tested positive twice, so I think it was possible. But he had minor chest pain for a day, and he's been fine ever since. And he's 80-something years old.
Yeah.
He's at a retirement home in Louisiana. So it's like he's tested positive twice. I'm like, oh, I'm bummed. I was super scared the first couple of days. He's my last living grandparent.
And because elderly people are so much more at risk.
Yeah. But then they took him to the hospital for a day, and then he came back the next day. He goes, yeah, my chest hurts a little, but I'm fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally different. It is what it is.
I'm of the mind, man. I feel like there's no way around the situation. The only way is through it, you know?
I think we went around it the first 2 months when it was most deadly and most active.
Also, I think it's when we knew the least about it.
And also most dangerous for hospitals being overrun and everything like that. Now it's
Which become, we have now. That hasn't happened.
It's become handled better. And if people... I understand people lost their lives and jobs and everything. But two-month pause in your normal life to potentially save hundreds of thousands of lives, we can all deal with it. I know people lost businesses and that sucks, and I'm sorry, but the government's there to bail you out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, and the government doesn't always work. I get that.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, it's a weird time. Hopefully people can understand. At the end of the day, I think we did the right thing, but I think it's time to, as we progress forward.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think that knowing what we knew... And how little we knew that you really had no choice but to, like, okay, let's wait here. Let's see what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
But now that, like you said, we've not overwhelmed the healthcare system. The curve has been flattened. I mean, the same number of people are still going to be infected, but it's just, so you're talking about a longer curve rather than a sharper spike, which is what the whole thing was about.
Yeah.
But I think from here on, you're really looking at it. I think you need to go to like a Sweden model where it's like individual responsibility. Like if you are a vulnerable person, remove yourself. And if not, you can't
trust people to do the smart thing.
Well, but that's a Darwin award for you then.
Like, yeah, but no, but it's not a Darwin award for me and you. If some dumb sick guy yokel is just going around touching everything and going to bars and then suddenly we get sick, it's not our fault.
Saying if you're in a vulnerable category, if you're an elderly person or if you have a pre-existing health condition, then you have to take precautions.
But it affects everybody differently. Like I said, my grandpa gave me more confidence, but at the same time, I know it could hit me worse or it could hit you worse or could hit someone else worse. It's different for everybody, so there's no way of knowing. But
well, sure. But by and large, Billy, people our age aren't
affected by and large, by it. Yes. By and large, yes. But it's dumb to be like, you got a Darwin Award for going to the grocery store that one too many times when we're our age and we got
okay,
sick.
Now you're twisting my words slightly. I'm saying if you're in a vulnerable category, like yes, if you're
but you're putting trust in the people, and I think most people are dumb.
Well, yeah.
So there we go. That's what I'm saying. So I think we did the best we could possibly do with the situation, and I think we're handling things well.
Yeah, okay, yes. I agree with that.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and I think again, this is just prediction. I think by fall, it'll be business as usual. Whether it's right or wrong, I think that's what it will be.
Okay.
So, does that make you feel better?
Yes. I wasn't trying to fight with you, Billy.
No, we're not fighting. I don't think we're fighting. We're just saying basically the same thing, but slightly differently.
Yes.
Let's see. Michael Terezes, is there a timetable for when we should see players back on the field and facilities? Big 12 said June 15th, so two more weeks from now.
So there you go.
I think that's what it is. Jay Barr, at Barker Lounger, how are we going to keep three awesome young backs happy, and which one is the most playing time this year? It's a nice problem to have.
It is a nice problem to have.
So Zach Evans, I think we'll get the most playing time.
Yes, and there is a way to keep three talented backs happy. Look no further than the early 2010s.
Yeah.
You had Matt Tucker, you had Waymon James, and you had Ed Wesley, all almost the exact same age, all equally talented, yep. all equal in their carries almost exactly.
Now, that was also before the transfer portal existed.
Yes, but I don't think any of those guys, I mean, that was my group. I was the running backs manager.
Yeah.
Those guys were my buddies. I never saw any indication that any of them were ever unhappy. Of course, you know, winning is the best deodorant.
Yes,
right.
They go 12-0 every year.
Yeah, 10-1. And but all those guys got equal work. They were all used in different situations. They were all key to the offense being so successful. You know, close your ears, Parker Fleming, but the run game was a huge reason why TCU was so successful in 2009 and 2010.
In his defense, the game has changed drastically. Yes. In the last 10 years.
Yeah.
The last 5 years has been. It's been as much evolutionary to the game of football as it was from like 1900 to 1970.
Yeah.
Like we've seen a 70-year jump in 5 years essentially in how football is being conducted and change and everything.
Well, you're defending Parker Fleming. Well, I can't believe my ears.
Well, there's some things he's right about. That's some things I'm right about too.
That's correct.
We're all right and wrong about certain things. So.
That's correct. But, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then.
I use that about myself all the time. So,
but my point is to say that you can have a stable of three really talented backs and keep them all. I mean, Georgia a few years ago, they had Gurley, Chubb. Nick Chubb, and Sony Michel all on the same team. You know, and you can do it.
And they beat TCU in the Liberty Bowl.
Yes, and that was some BS, right? That's a game that we should not have lost.
Should not have lost that game. But
that was that whole season was a whole bunch of should not have happened.
Then that Georgia the next year went and lost in the title game and. What do we go? Oh, we went to the Big 12 title game the next year.
Yeah, we went to the Big 12 title
game. Yeah, we did okay. It was fine. Yeah, I think there's a way to keep them all happy, but I think Zach Evans gets the most run of the freshmen, obviously.
Yes.
And then Barlow and Foster 50-50 between the 20% that's left.
Yeah.
after Evans and DeMarcado.
Yeah. Now, how do you, because if you're sitting there playing NCAA football and you got to go to the depth chart every two plays and change it slightly so that you can put in a different guy, I don't know how you manage that as a coach. Well, but there is a way to do it.
Usually they get drives.
Yeah.
Usually it's one person per drive, or if someone breaks off a 60-yard run, they just jump off and the next guy jumps in.
Yeah.
So it's they've been coaching a long time. They'll figure that out, how to substitute players and whatnot. All right.
Basic things.
Fernando Coronado Jr., who's going to step up a wide receiver this year? I think Blair Conright.
Yeah, he's the big dark horse that we're looking at.
And
Tay Barber is going to be your go-to guy. He was stepping into that role last year, and Quentin Johnston's going to be a big breakout player as well, for sure. Also, Tavalus Hunt. Don't sleep on Tavalus Hunt.
Don't sleep on T. Hunt.
I mean, he had that catch in Baylor for a reason. He's a very talented guy, you know, so it's just a matter of him continuing his development and getting more and more opportunities, so he's going to have more and more chances to make plays like that.
That was rated as the number 4 play in all of college football last season by ESPN the other day.
I believe it. I saw that. I was like, yes, that is accurate.
So we got plenty of options at wide receiver. It's just a matter of who can catch the ball. Who can catch the ball, that's who's going to play. And then with such a talented backfield, do we have the O-line to make holes for them?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're going to see a lot of Andrew Coker this year. Big fan of him.
Mm-hmm.
Coy McMillan, Kelton Holland's experience at the guard spot.
Yeah.
TJ Storman, the grad transfer coming in to play left tackle. There's talent and some experience there, but it's a really talented group.
It is. Yeah, TJ Storman coming in is huge to give you a little more experience there on that line. It's still a talented player. I would, like you say, I'd love to see Kelton Hollins fit in at guard.
Yep.
So you have that experience there. And again, you know, it's a shame that he couldn't get as much run this last year, because dude's really talented. Coy McMillan proved himself last year. Andrew Coker, we've both been really high on as a young guy. Yes. I mean, this isn't a group that has necessarily, you know, years and years under their belt as a unit, but you've got pieces there, absolutely.
Yep. Plenty of opportunities there. And the last question from Coronado, he kind of said it two different ways. Is there any similarities between Max Duggan's freshman year and Andy Dalton's freshman year? And then do we see Duggan having a sophomore year like Andy did?
All right. I am glad you asked.
I want to save this for last.
Okay.
We've got lots of notes for this.
Yeah. So I wrote down a whole host of notes whenever I happened upon this Twitter question. So I want to really do an in-depth comparison here between Andy's first year as a starter and Max's first year as a starter. So we're talking about 2007 versus 2019. And it's worth bearing in mind, Andy Dalton was a redshirt freshman, whereas Max Duggan was a true freshman. That's a big difference in physical development and, you know, having the time in the program and learning a playbook. So there's that that's worth remembering. So let's first look at records. We got in 2007, the Frogs went 8-5, 4-4 in the Mountain West Conference. They end up winning the Texas Bowl against Houston. Case Keenum led Houston team, by the way. And he was the MVP of that Texas Bowl. Yep. So some notable wins in that season besides Houston. Frogs beat Baylor in Andy's first start as a TCU player, 27-0. They beat Stanford that season. They also beat SMU. That's not so significant because SMU was all that great. It's because the Frogs had lost the Iron Skillet in 2005, took the year off from the series in 2006, and then got it back in 2007. So that's why that's significant. Lost to number 7 overall Texas at the time, Air Force, Wyoming, Utah, and BYU. And, of course, not a lot of shame in losing to Utah and BYU in those years. It was Utah, BYU, and TCU that were always fighting at the top of the Mountain West Conference. It was the Air Force and Wyoming losses that were really, like, frustrating when they happened.
Air Force, wasn't that, like, a double overtime or triple overtime?
Yeah.
Dalton threw a bad pick, I think, in one of those games.
Yeah.
Or late in one of the overtimes.
Yeah, you're remembering that correctly. Yeah. That was, like I say, that and Wyoming were both really frustrating losses.
2006?
2007. So, meanwhile, we all remember 2019. Frogs go 5-7, 3-6 in the Big 12, getting wins against Texas, Texas Tech, KU, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, and Purdue. And, of course, Texas is being that marquee win under Max's belt, whereas you'd probably look to Houston as the marquee win for Andy in that first season. Mm-hmm. Andy
17-3 lead in the fourth quarter of that game and lost 20-17 in overtime.
In that Air Force game?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Andy was an honorable mention freshman All-American. Max Duggan was honorable mention Big 12 Freshman of the Year. Okay, so we're looking at two similar things here. Now let's get into the stats, the nuts and bolts. So Andy, in that first season, was 222 of 371. So that's a completion percentage of 59.8%. At the time, those were both single-season records for TCU. 222 completions, 371 attempts. Max, last year, was 181 for 339, so fewer attempts than Andy. You also got to remember that Max wasn't the starter for every single game. He also was taken out in some key situations that killed momentum, which I will be obliged not to rant about again. But that's a 53.4 completion percentage. So if you're just looking at pure stats, Andy had the slightly better completion percentage. You're going to see this as kind of a consistent theme throughout these stats that were really very similar across the board. Andy passed for 2,459 yards. At the time, that was second in team history. And Max set a true freshman record at TCU with 2,077 yards. So again, fewer yards, but also fewer opportunities, but still really, really good. That's a true freshman record. 10 touchdowns for Andy, 15 for Max through the air. 11 interceptions for Andy, 10 interceptions for Max on the year. Now, there's some interesting stats about these interception numbers that we can get into. Andy vastly improved at the end of that redshirt freshman season. He threw 11 interceptions, yes, but in his final 96 attempts, he only threw 3. So you're talking about a drastic difference at the end of the year, whereas Max started the year a lot different. He had his first 143 attempts, which is the second longest streak in TCU history. He had no interceptions. But again, we all remember talking about this last year, like, well, Max, we're not taking any risks with him. We're not letting him throw the ball deep downfield. We're playing it really safe. And so that's why you see the spike in interceptions late in the year, because he's trying more difficult passes, more difficult situations.
Also, a lot of those, I think, were like the minute left in the game, got to try and make a deep shot, gets picked off.
Yes.
Or like a couple, I think, players drop passes, they end up getting picked off.
Yes, let's think about the interception that was off of Shaywo's hands against Baylor. You can't pin that on Max. No. But that's, that's all quarterbacks are going to have some of those fall into that gray area. QBR, Andy was 118.5, Max was 113.6. So again, we're talking very close here, very close. Rushing yards, and this is another one where there's a slight differentiation in the type of offense that was being run and the situations these players were put in. With more designed runs in the offense for Andy, he rushed 98 times for 232 yards. That was by far the lowest total of his career. He never had less than 432 for the next 3 years. And he had 5 rushing touchdowns. Max rushed 130 times, so significantly more, but also Max was scrambling significantly more. Yes. And this is where it gets impressive. Max, on fewer designed runs, had 555 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So better rushing stats with more stacked against him, if you will. Also, Max had no receptions. Andy had 1 reception from Jeremy Curley for 27 yards. So that's worth throwing in there as well. So, long story short, to answer your question, there's a lot of similarity.
Very similar.
A lot of similarity. Yes. And you've heard coaches and people within the program talk about Max having such a great head on his shoulders. Max is a leader. Max is, you know, kind of beyond his years in kind of his stature and his the way he thinks and the way he carries himself, which was very same with Andy. Andy was super, I mean, he's a super strong Christian guy, really, really great locker room leader. You know, he's that guy who you rally around. You know, and it seems like Max is really in that same vein. So, all indications point to that Max is going to have a similar progression that Andy did. You know, where 2008 was that year that the Frogs, after, you know, 2 good but not great years, 2008 is that year where they're 1 win away from the BCS. Whereas we've talked about this next year, the Frogs could be, you know, fighting for that second in the Big 12 spot and then setting the stage for 2021, which we all talk about. Also worth mentioning, you know, this isn't something that I like to acknowledge back in those Mountain West years, but there is a significant difference in the level of competition that these two guys are facing. Max, as a true freshman, is playing in the Big 12, whereas Andy, as a redshirt freshman, has only slightly better stats playing in the Mountain West. So that's something worth considering as well.
Yeah, I think everyone, when I did a bunch of radio interviews during the season last year, people would ask about Doug, and I'd say he's Andy Dalton. Like, he's the next Andy Dalton, hopefully.
He even has red hair. I mean, come on.
Yes. So it's too many similarities to pass up. If he has that kind of career as Andy Dalton had, sign me up.
Yes.
Right now.
100%.
No questions asked. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, man.
No? That'll do it?
I'm all talked out after reading through those notes.
Yeah, you ran through those real quick. Yeah, so thanks for joining us again this week. Next week we'll talk more about the numbers in the 80s, I guess. We'll maybe there'll be
80s things, party.
Things will change hour by hour, minute by minute nowadays with news and whatnot. So keep an eye out on that and plug something. You want to plug something?
Oh, yeah, and hopefully we'll have that offensive line bracket to talk about by the end of next week.
We'll be
introducing that to you. But, yeah, follow me on Twitter, at Clint_Foster55. Love interaction with you folks out there. Also, I mean, you know, Billy's been plugging his Instagram. Hey, if you want to follow me on Instagram, at TheClintFoster. I also post on my stories these votes for the uniforms. Again. Yeah, you can vote twice.
Vote twice if you want to. No rigging these elections. At Billy Wessels, at TCU_Rivals on Twitter, at Scoop_It on Instagram. And then I should be doing this more often, but I know this is a weird year with tax season. My dad is a CPA, and he's advertises. So hit my dad up for tax questions, 972-672-9968. It's Carl Wessels, also known as Purple Minutes Dad on Twitter, 972-672-9968. He's getting his own, like, actual office here in, like, 2 weeks. So, in
one statue.
So, if you're in Ellis County and have more questions, hit him up. So, we'll talk to y'all next week.